Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 295, episode 3 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Thursday, July 13th, 2023. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Oh, can't you see, Ron DeSantis, man, no one likes you even in the least. What's that you say, Ron DeSantis, man? Your general vibe is off-putting and bleak. A Ron no-no. That is courtesy of Pat on the Discord. Just Pat. Pat says, kind of low effort on my part. Not low effort enough for me, Pat. I love it. Thank you, sir. I went with a Michael Jackson direction on that one. You know?
It's good. It's solid.
Well, I'm thrilled to be joined by a very special guest co-host, the producer behind shows like Fake Doctors, Real Friends. Welcome to our show. A brilliant writer who you can read at Vulture, The AV Club, Teen Vogue, Pace, The Advocate. You've heard her on Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's the brilliant, the talented Joelle Moniz!
Pew, pew, pew! You guys have to add filmmaker to the list now.
Filmmaker.
Oh, yeah. She's back in her filmmaking bag now.
Hell yeah. Very excited. On Joelle's film career.
All the film nerd just pouring out. But yeah, I'm excited to be back, Jack.
Tell me about the filmmaking.
Oh my gosh. I'm executive producing a short, which is a wild thing to say. People ask me what I'm doing. I'm like, I'm still not sure yet. It's a lot of email campaigns, a lot of, yes, we can get that after, grants. It's basically money and paperwork, which is a very interesting and new side of filmmaking for me. But I'm excited because my friend's from college. He was my cinematographer. His name's David Chari. He went to AFI. He's been making movies. But he wanted to challenge himself to make something he's never done before. So he's doing a one-take film. So it's 19 minutes, one shot. We're just going straight through.
How many minutes?
It is 19.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a long shot.
Yeah. It's a really long shot.
Bit of a Russian arc situation. Arc.
Hey, anyone? Jack, with your...
Thank you. First this is my second film, deep cut film reference to a movie I haven't seen.
Yeah. Off mic, you were talking about the Red Violin.
Did a Red Violin. Yeah. We pitched a Red Violin type style film that follows a Dare t-shirt off mic. So
this
yeah,
is my next film. I've already decided. We're just going to add it to the roster.
There it is.
It's perfect.
Amazing.
Yeah. So we're excited. It's going to be it's a mystery thriller satire. So it's funny. It's kind of dark and twisty. It's very surprising. If you want to learn more about it, follow me over on Instagram. So that's those what's been happening in my world. And I'm excited to be back here with you.
Well, we're excited to have you. And we're also excited to be joined in our third seat by another stalwart of the film scene, very talented writer, stand-up comedian, podcast host of the Bechdel Cast. She also happens to have a master's degree in film. The most anagrammable name in the English language. It's Caitlin Durante!
Hello! Glad to be back.
It's great to have you. Now, you are wearing a t-shirt that says Night Paint.
It says Paint Night.
Paint Night. All right.
Paint Night or Night Paint, but Paint Night.
So, do either of you know what Paint Night is?
No, I'm guessing
by your shirt, which is black with a beautiful splash of color right over the P.
S-O-C.
I assumed it's either for couples and it's very romantic, and or friend groups and there's some drinking and you paint and it's nighttime. How close am I?
Nailed it.
Yes.
Damn.
So yes. I'm wearing this shirt. I have this shirt because I was formerly a paint night instructor. For the first few months I lived in LA. That's right. Not to brag or anything, but
Flex.
I would show up. I'd set up the event and then people would show up often either on a date or it was a lot of friend groups. It was a lot of like middle-aged women who were there to get drunk with their friends, things like that. And you would usually paint a tree.
It was almost always a tree.
And I would kind of guide you through how to make this painting because I'm, among so many other talents,
a painter. Wow.
Painter.
But make no mistake, I'm not a good painter. You do not have to be a very good painter to be a paint night instructor. You just kind of, it's not quite paint by numbers because you're like, it's acrylic paints and you're like blending, you're mixing colors.
Blending and mixing.
Yeah. Those are two different things.
Advanced stuff.
little known fact. But yeah, so I would be like, here's how you paint this tree. And then they would paint it and then they would get drunk. And I'd have to like sell my soul to be like, please buy a raffle ticket to another paint night event. And then I would keep the money. It was, you know. And then, oh, here's a fun story also. When I was first living in LA, I was very broke and people would usually order food because these would take place at generally like restaurants. There would be like a separate room and then people would order food and then they would leave a lot of it behind. So I would just take
eat
their leftovers.
Oh,
yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, you would.
That's poor survival 101. Free food, never pass it up.
Never pass it up.
I used to work at an AMC, and at the end of the night, guess where those hot dogs went? Oh, straight home with me, baby. Yes.
But there would be like a half-eaten piece of pizza that I would eat. I would even cut off that.
You wouldn't even cut off the mouth part.
This was pre-COVID.
Teeth marks.
This was pre-COVID. I threw caution to the wind. Yeah. Okay.
I love it. I ate my weight. Like when I was a waiter, I ate my weight in leftover fries. Like, which
for sure.
Fries don't even keep that well, but
no,
they had
don't.
a little sauce that brought them back to life. So yeah, just hurriedly shoveling cold fries into my mouth over a trash can.
Oh yeah.
You're like, no, I'm throwing this away. What are you talking about?
It's, the life.
Yeah, truly. All right. Well, Caitlin, we're going to get to know you a little bit better. Including, I can't wait to hear your thoughts on the new Wonka trailer, which appears to just be Paddington with Timothy Chalamet as a funny little guy instead of Paddington, in there. But first, a few of the things we're talking about. Tucker Carlson, I'm kind of proud of it. If Tucker Carlson vlogs in the woods and nobody watches, does Tucker Carlson actually vlog? Because it turns out we had raised the question. Everybody was like, oh, he's on Twitter now. And like his first video was seen by the equivalent of like the entire U.S. population. We're fucked. And then like the other day, I think on this show, I was like, wait, did he never dropped a second episode, huh? And I was like, yeah, no, like Fox News sent a cease and desist. And I think he just like never got around. He's had 8 episodes since then, and just nobody's really watching them, or it's not making much of a mark. So we're going to look at Tucky's numbers and just the question of like, How much of their whole bullshit is just, you know, media about their media and like them just make themselves seem more important and popular than they actually are? We will catch up on. We're at an interesting place with regards to AI and the popular imagination, and AI is the villain in the upcoming Mission Impossible movie. So we're just going to talk about that and some of the claims we're seeing in headlines and how they hold up to the truth, all of that. Plenty more. But first, Caitlin, I'd love to ask you, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
I Googled first movie to show a toilet flushing on
Yes. screen. Which one was it?
Well, it is the movie Psycho by Mr. Alfred Hitchcock.
It would be.
Well, I Googled
is that like
it
against the Hays Code or something?
Honestly, I feel like it maybe it would have been. Or like just the idea of toilets or, you know, like pooping would be considered too improper by the code. But by the 60s, which I think the movie came out in 1960, you know, the code, people were taking some liberties.
People were taking some nasty shits and were just ready to see it confronted in their yeah. entertainment. Yeah, that movie was like the old boy of its day. Like every, like they were like, yeah, yeah, we're gonna like throw this twist in where like the star dies halfway through, and also we're gonna show you a fucking toilet, people.
Yeah, like,
I do wonder if people were scandalized by that. That was a movie when it came out where everyone was like, people are like throwing up in theaters and just running out of the theater because they're so scared of it. Like it was a big rage. So
yeah,
I wonder if it was the toilet that got them.
It was the toilet that absolutely disgusted people. Well, I Googled it because I go to a trivia night sometimes. I'm not just a paint night person. I also do trivia. I don't host the trivia
all the nights. Yeah.
Every night of the week, there's a night for me, and I will go and play like pub trivia. And there's this one that I frequent, and they will post like one question ahead of time that you can look up. And like, so it's basically like a freebie, but so you have to like follow the account, and then you get this like freebie question. And the question I think was, what 1960 horror movie was the first movie to show a toilet flushing on screen? So I was like, oh, I have to know this. And then I knew it.
And you Googled it. So yeah, you Googled the answer while you were doing the thing. You're a cheater at trivia is what you're saying. You're damned.
Well, I wish, but I didn't even end up going to the trivia that night.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So I was like, oh, now I know the answer and I can stay home.
That's perfect. I want you guys to know that it was the Hays Code. They considered toilets vulgar. But in the 60s, they started to loosen the code, and they were concerned because there's toilet paper in it, and they were like, contents in a toilet, disgusting, we don't know about that. But they were like, listen, you can't see any actual body material in the toilet, so relax.
Yeah. Okay.
And they did, and then it got out there, and I think that's hilarious. We were scared of toilets for a while in our cinema. What would children have done?
What was the context? For some reason, I was remembering the like swirling shot of like where the camera like swirls in on her eye, like as she's dying in the shower, and then the camera like kind of swirls around the swirling water and I assumed that it was like a match to that, and they just like went to a toilet and showed like a toilet swirling, but that's not what happened.
I don't remember, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if
just
I can see.
Cut
it.
To somebody flushing a toilet, like finishing up their business.
Yeah, Norman Bates is like, oops, I have to take a break from
Psycho's
murder to
poop
take
too.
A pee-pee.
Yeah. Well, amazing. What is what's something that you think is overrated?
I think that Wes Anderson is overrated.
Caitlin, let the chopper sing. Talk to us. What exactly about Wes Anderson is overrated?
I think, look, I he just tells the same quirky little story over and over again. Granted, I have not seen Asteroid City yet. So maybe this one will just blow me away and I will be excited again. To be clear, there was a time period where I did like his work. But I don't know, maybe I think it's just like too repetitive. I don't know. And but like, yeah, I get it. Like he's an auteur, so he's going to have a distinct style that he kind of just keeps recycling over and over. But like, I don't know. I just like find his quirky little quirkiness a bit tiresome these days.
Yeah.
What I'm era sorry. Of Wes well, Anderson were when you were you rocking in? With yeah. him? Yeah.
I would say, well, the peak for me was Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Hell yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Probably my favorite of his. And leading up to, but then like after that, I felt like there was just a decline.
Comes next, Moonrise Kingdom, I think.
That one was like, okay, that's fine. And then, film. All right. And then again, another controversial take here, but I thought that Isle of Dogs was, speaking of toilets, that was pee pee poo poo.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That, I think that's totally fair. Okay, here's my experience watching almost every Wes Anderson film. Just like, gosh, that's really pretty. Oh, look, it's Owen Wilson. He's always delightful.
Mm-hmm.
Costume should get credit. Wow, the fits are fitting. That movie was that I'll never watch it again. And don't revisit Wes Anderson films. They're like very beautiful. I feel like they have just enough story to avoid being museum pieces. You know what I mean? You ever seen a movie in a museum?
Yeah, right. But it's like, tell me the plot of any Wes Anderson movie. You can't, like, I can't do it. Like, I don't, they just don't stick with me. I feel like it's just like, you see a frame and you're like, wow, look at all that headroom. That's nice. And look at this mise-en-scene. Woohoo. And then you're like, but what was the plot? And also, why did I watch it?
Yeah.
Pretty feel pictures. Like. He is going to be the least likely filmmaker to for you to be like, oh, he really surprised me on this one. this is not, I did not see this one coming. I think his like French Dispatch was his attempt to do something different. And I think it's like it's definitely my least favorite of his movies.
I skipped and, it. I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah. But it also seems like I don't see that many people like riding for that one. Usually, like, I feel like his movies are some people really like it, some people really hate it. And, you know, it's kind of random. Like, I really like Grand Budapest Hotel, but I don't like a lot of the ones around that.
Sure.
And that's kind of the only later era one that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people like really love the Life Aquatic. I've never really connected with that one.
Me either.
But yeah, French Dispatch felt like people were like, we're not going with you on this one. There are some like really good performances in it. Yeah, I don't know. Part of me wants to see the Asteroid City one because I don't know. It just looks like he's instead of trying to do something different, he's like, I'm going to do the same. So hard with this one.
Oh, you didn't like it when I tried something new? Well, fine. Yeah. I'll do the thing again. Yeah.
How about if Wes Anderson tried to make a Wes Anderson movie? He like got jealous of all the people being like on social media being like, what if your day was a Wes Anderson movie? And he's
it's
like, all right.
So wild to me that he was upset about that. Like I was really trying to.
Was he upset about that?
I was. Yeah. Just...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he came out and he was like, I would never look at those. And people were like, it's like people are just homaging your film for like that. I think like the highest form of flattery is like the entire internet got together and was like, I think your aesthetic is so utterly charming. I'm going to place myself inside of it. It was, I really liked the meme. I thought it was cute. Disappointing. Court your fan base, please. I think this is the best a parasocial relationship can be, is just to say, hey guys, I see you and I liked what you did and thank you. And then just move on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wonder if it's also like it would just be like he's worried it would like fuck him up a little bit to see everybody's like version of him. The way that like seeing someone do an impression of you can be a little unnerving for the first time, you know?
That is fair. That, okay, maybe.
Or maybe he's just an asshole. I couldn't possibly imagine a universe where that's true.
It's from Wes Anderson. It's got his quote directly. So, okay. So Wes Anderson said about the memes, "I'm very good at protecting myself from seeing all that stuff. If somebody sends me something like that, I'll immediately erase it and say, please, sorry, do not send me things of people doing me, because I do not want to look at it thinking, is that what I do? Is that what I mean? I don't want to see too much of someone else thinking about what I try to be, because God knows I could then start doing it." So to your point, Jack, this is okay. A form of self-protection and not a dismissal of his fans.
Yeah. Okay.
And all right.
Okay. Also, he does betray in that quote, like a little bit of like a thing I always suspect about anybody who got famous before like a certain point. Like that they just like don't know how technology works. He's like, if someone sends me something, I erase it. Like, what do you mean you erase it? The link that they sent to you?
You like go in? They delete it from internet.com.
Oh man. What Caitlin, what's something you think is underrated?
All right, continuing on the movie train. Choo choo.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible 4. People are not out Ghost here Pros. Riding for Mission Impossible 4 specifically the way that I think they should. People are like, oh, wow, Rogue Nation. Oh, wow, the number 6 one. Oh, I really love number 3. No, there's no love ever for Mission Impossible 4 Ghost Protocol.
Oh, I think that's the best one.
I think so, too.
It's so good.
I know, but no, we are alone in this world, I think, Jack.
I thought that one was the one where everyone was like, okay, this, like, I thought that one kind of picked it up, at least in, like, the critical consensus. Like, 2 was not good. It was stinky.
It was another toilet movie.
Hair commercial. It was a hair, like, it was just glamour shots of Tom Cruise and then Tom Cruise doing impossible things. But not in the way that we jumping a motorcycle, not off of something, just making it jump somehow. But and then 3 was like kind of but like 4 seemed everybody seemed on board with it, and like Brad Bird first was so huge back then.
Right,
4 was so fucking fire. I had to look it up because I couldn't remember. I don't remember. If we just say numbers, I'm like, I've seen so many Mission
Impossible. Sorry, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Okay. That ought to clear it up for you.
Get with the program.
Again, not plot, but I remember places. Y'all remember Tom Cruise hanging off the side of a building, just scaling one of the tallest
buildings
in the world? The window, and then his gloves are failing, and then a sandstorm is coming, all while they're trying to do a switcheroo inside the building. Yeah. Fucking fantastic. But just on the... Listen, fuck Tom Cruise, but man makes a good movie. I'm sorry. Yes, it's really fucking good. And it's like the intensity is so great. We have Paula Patton, a black woman in here, just being the hot lady that's walking around in gorgeous dresses. We love to see it. Like Ghost Protocol, just title alone.
Cool name.
Peak. But then you also get, if you're a person who really loves the relationships in Mission Impossible, there's like a lot of heart coming through when he gets back with his lady. I think, spoiler alert, at the end he's like, oh god, I see my girl and I love her. This is also the movie where the final villain is just raining cars on people and Tom's got like,
yeah, that's the one.
Ghost Protocol freaking rocks, dude.
One of those car lift things that I've always like seen passing by like on a highway and been like, that can't be like the best way to store cars.
How does this work? I feel like is that not the first one where like Simon Pegg is pretty heavily involved, both as a cast member and
I think
on the like kind of writing team?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's good. But people are like, what is the 6th one called? I keep trying to conjure
Fallout.
I think that's
Fallout.
Oh, Fallout.
People are like, oh, remember the fight in the bathroom when they're punching each other? I'm like, what about the 4th movie, though?
Yeah. What about the 4th?
Arm/guncock is an iconic moment in Mission Impossible history and the sexuality of this country. We all really changed and evolved over that 2 second.
Henry Cavill, is that who we're talking about? Are we talking about Henry Cavill's arm?
He had a mustache and he like, was cocking his arms like they were guns. It was a time to be alive. We were 2 years from COVID. We were innocent. We didn't know. We did not know. But yeah, as a whole, I don't know if it beats out MI4 for me.
MI4 best.
I wonder if there's some intentional, like, kind of diminishing of Ghost Protocol, because everything since then, I think, has been Christopher McQuarrie and Tom Cruise, and they, like, partner on everything. So maybe they're, you know, they just don't want to talk about it and, like, emphasize it as much. But I do feel like people who are into movies, that is their favorite Mission Impossible movie. So if you have somehow missed it, if you've fallen into the Cruise McQuarrie gray out of Ghost Protocol, you know, definitely check it out. It's a blast.
Love it.
All right. Have you seen the new one? Came out, I believe, last night.
Oh, did it? Oh, for, like, as a early release? No, I have an AMC A-list stubs reservation.
Flex.
We come to this place for magic, of course.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
We do.
And we wear reservation sparkly pants and high heels and walk through puddles.
I am seeing it on Saturday morning.
Nice. I think I need to get that. My last trip to the movies with my kids to see Across the Spider-Verse, which, by the way, I do want to get your opinion on that, Caitlin.
Oh my gosh, we simply must.
The person who made me watch Into the Spider-Verse with my son when he was. You didn't make me, but you told me.
I held you at knife point.
You got me so excited about that movie. I was like, we're going to watch this even though you're three. And he loved it, and he loved this one. But the line at the concessions, they finally wore me down, where the line was like a Disney World line. Like, it was just, it was not moving. It was 30 minutes of waiting to get the concessions.
Oh, no. What?
Yeah. So,
yeah, you get yourself a little Stubbs car, you could just pre-order that.
Yeah.
And then while you walk up, you're ready to go. Although I do recommend not pre-ordering your popcorn. If you go first thing in the morning, listen, here's a tip. If you're going first thing in the morning, like Caitlin's going Saturday morning, you can pre-order your popcorn because they pop their popcorn fresh in the morning and it's totally fine and it'll be tasty. If you're going to a movie after 3 o'clock, I would get your popcorn in the AMC Gold line because it's popcorn that they popped like 4 hours ago and it's all crumbly and it's just not good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back. I have two different films that I want to ask Caitlin about. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zai Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. And Caitlin, you are famously a huge proponent of Paddington, Paddington 2, and Paddington 3, the Willy Wonka origin story, which seems to be what we've just seen a trailer for. So we took a little break. We stopped down during the break for everybody to watch the Wonka. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called? Wonka?
Wonka.
Yes.
Just Wonka. Cut the Willy and Chocolate Factory. Just Wonka. Mm. It's cleaner. Mm. So it has a lot of like the Paddingtonian like charms, and like it feels like it takes place in the same universe as Paddington in certain parts.
I mean, from what I can tell, they're recycling sets from the Paddington movies. They're recycling the cast of the Paddington movies. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's the same director and screenwriter as... I mean, Paul King directed both Paddington 1 and 2, except for not 3, which I'm a little nervous about. But and then Simon Farnaby, is that his name?
Oh, my co-wrote... God, I hope it is. Simon Farnaby? Get the fuck out of here.
So British.
Farnaby, get over here.
He co-wrote the screenplay for Paddington 2. He's also the guy who plays the guard in both Paddington movies. He has like a little bit part.
Does he have a mustache and kind of a round face?
No mustache, but he's got, I would actually call it more of a square face.
Okay.
And he's the guy who, the joke is that he's attracted to men who are dressed as women. So the implications of that and it being framed as a joke is a little questionable, but that's like his gimmick in both movies.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, so, okay, this guy, that's about what I'd expect a Simon Farnaby to look like. He's got wild hair. But, yeah, it just seems like, and there's some, like, mildly problematic, like, I don't know, white saviorism stuff happening here. And somebody who, like, at one point steps out of a car that seems to be completely full of shit. Which I'm not sure what, or maybe that's chocolate.
I think chocolate.
That was chocolate.
That's
chocolate?
I think it was like.
That looks like horse dung.
You know the movie about a man who makes chocolate? There's a car full of shit. Also, I think Keegan-Michael Key is in a fat suit at one point.
Oh, bleh.
Like.
Killing it.
I'm not sure about this movie. I also have so much Timothée Chalamet.
Fatigue?
What's the word? Fatigue. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very fatigued.
Yeah.
So, the young lad is talented. I quite liked his performance in Dune. He was doing the thing. He cares about
doing
it a lot. Yeah. Here, it seems, I can't even necessarily say miscast. It just doesn't, nothing seems to quite be coming together in a way that gives you the warm gooeys that a Paddington gives you, perhaps because Paddington is an animated bear and precocious and adorable beyond all measure. And that's a boy.
Yes.
He's a very famous guy whose face we're all familiar with. It just lacks the whole suspension of disbelief required to kind of sink into like, oh, it's a cozy British movie. And it was funny because as the credits were rolling, they're like, from the team that brought you Paddington and the producers of Harry Potter, I said, of course they did this. Look at these aerial shots of CG spaces completely unnecessarily. Britain is no shortage of adorable little shops you could film at and or imitate. Why are we here in this like cement circle space? I didn't understand any of the choices made. I wasn't getting the tone or story that I think one would hope for. And I also think Oompa Loompas are so problematic, and you can't just keep doing this with Roald Dahl properties and being like, so we know racism was involved, but we just ran in the other direction, so it's totally fine. Mm-hmm. We are not addressing it, but also we're not giving up these properties. So here,
yeah,
formerly racist thing right in your face. Enjoy. It's cute now, though. It's charming. It's not. It's very annoying.
But now Hugh Grant plays the
Now it asks the question, what so if Hugh Grant awesome. Was orange? Yeah.
I will say I got the smallest chuckle out of once we start, we can't stop dancing and Hugh Grant's ass is just in the air. I was like,
yeah.
I bet this movie gets me at points because they know how to trigger someone into crying and or like being like, aw. But I doubt it's cohesive as an entire film is where I'm at based off that trailer.
We will see. Willy Wonka is a creep in the movies that succeed. Like he's I'm not sure what they're doing, what they're going to do with that part. Like that, right? That is kind of what's fun about him is there's like an edge of danger there. Mm-hmm. And this just seems to be like he's the story of an amazing magical kid who's good at everything. And like has a lot of whimsy and gumption. Mm-hmm. Anyways, and then Across the Spider-Verse, just full triumph.
Oh, best movie I've ever seen, maybe.
It's a blast. Yeah.
I loved it.
So good. Okay. All right. Speaking of best movies we've ever seen. it's great.
Yeah.
Not great. Tucker Carlson's Man of the Woods era. Seems to be, so I don't know. His show dropped. There was like the announcement that everybody made a big deal about. Got 137 million tweet views. That's not people who viewed the video. That's people who saw the tweet. Episode one, 120 million. That's like a big portion of the U.S. population. And then it kind of disappeared off my radar. I did not know what was happening. But yeah, so there's like this new thing making the rounds because he's interviewing accused rapist Andrew Tate for what appears to be 2.5 hours.
Ugh.
Seems to be too many hours for that interview to take place. But the most surprising thing for me was that it is episode 8 of his show. They've kept making them and just like nobody like really noticed or gave a shit. There seemed to be a promise with like the announcement in the first episode, like Elon and Carlson together now, you know, you're in trouble, friends. And it's just, it doesn't seem to have taken. And now I think that's where the Andrew Tate thing's coming from. Presumably like the Liver King is coming to the show soon because it's just like, well, this person's popular on the internet, right? We'll go with them.
Anything for ratings.
Anything for them sweet internet ratings. But yeah, the numbers go from 120 million tweet views on the first to 60 million to there was Trump got indicted, so it bounced back up to 104, but down to 32 million, then 17, 15, 8.6 million tweet views on the last one, which, yeah. I think in the world of trend forecasting, that's known as a death spiral, but you can actually see the spiral shape because there's a trailing tail of panicked diarrhea behind it. Yeah. That's the official. I'm just reading that off. And it is chocolate. Right. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be an uptick with the Andrew Tate interview, but I don't know.
I wonder if he's a victim of like Atomic Habits. You know, he's no longer on his like main network, right? So people who are just routinely watching Fox and like, okay, so there we are, we're good, we can easily find him. Like now you have to kind of go searching for him. And then Twitter is imploding like rapidly. And so, because I don't think his base, at least from what I know, has been is discouraged or off of watching him. I doubt it's his actual popularity and so much of shifting. I want it to be his popularity. I just think it's probably more likely that all of the shifting of platforms and the ever-changing social media landscape as it exists currently might be interfering overall with people just naturally being able to find him.
Yeah.
Also, these numbers are tweet views, right? So it doesn't even mean that the person watched the episode? Is that right?
So we actually found those numbers for like people who actually watched the episode. And first of all, these numbers are wildly inflated because in order to count as a video view, you just have to have watched it for 2 seconds. But they're like all a fraction of the numbers that you would see on the tweet views. Like his episode one was not viewed by 120 million people. The actual episode was viewed 26.7 million times for at least 2 seconds. And his latest one was not 8.6 million. It was 3.8 million, which again, that's 2 seconds of viewing. That's about as much as his like TV show ratings, where like people actually have to watch like a chunk of the episode in order for it to count. Like, and this is like, you know, 3.8 million people glancing past it, watching it for 2 seconds accidentally, and then being like, no thanks. So, and the trend is just very, has to be a little discouraging. So I'm assuming there's going to be a lot of tweets from Elon Musk being like, these numbers are actually great. And, you know, he's going to be pushing these really hard to get the numbers back up, because this drastically undercuts his narrative that Twitter is like the future of media and that he's doing a good job, I think is actually the main part of his narrative. But I also just think that there is certainly a sizable portion, like too large a portion of the population, that watches Tucker Carlson and thinks he makes sense and shit like that. But
a frighteningly large proportion. But
I think they have, in the mainstream media and like our media echo chamber, have like made us overestimate how big that is. And like they're like the far right movement. Like I think they're finding out, like, in a bunch of ways across a bunch of different stories. Like, we're finding out the book bans are like only like there's like a handful of people who made the book bans happen. The
right,
like Mothers for Liberty is like a loose assortment of people like from across the country who are like, they're not even from the school boards or the school districts that they are terrorizing. And like the midterms were, I think a lot of people were like, oh, this will be a wake-up call. This should be a wake-up call. People don't like when the Republican Party goes in this like far right direction, or at least not enough people like it. So I don't know. It just feels like we've been seeing stories repeatedly that's like, people aren't like this crazy, you know? Like the like super far right is not as big as they appear to be when in the mainstream media, and like when you're seeing the news stories that like they generate. There's like a lot of the Westboro Baptist Church effect happening, where that organization, which actually was just a family out in Kansas, was able to like dominate mainstream media coverage for like a decade. You know, it's like by being outrageous and infuriating, you're able to make yourself seem like you're one of the biggest, most important like cultural movements, instead of just being, you know, kind of making a lot of people uncomfortable.
Yeah. There's a whole digital masking as well. If you think about, you know, the way Facebook drove us from written work to video with false numbers, a lot of people are claiming they're seeing similar trends on Twitter, and that soon as they started showing stats under tweets, people were like, these numbers seem off as compared to, like, you know, people have independent trackers that like get all of this information from their Twitter handles, and the numbers are not correlating. And so it wouldn't surprise me if even the generosity of those numbers under Tucker's show were, you know, being doctored from within.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And like, I don't know how they could have foreseen that a pivot to video would not work, you know, decades after that, like, basically broke the rest of the media. But that seems to be one of his main strategies. It's almost like Elon Musk's not that smart. Almost like Elon Musk is not as smart as we've all been pretending he is. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about AI.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out What's New on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. And so the latest Mission Impossible dropped last night or two nights ago. It's getting great reviews. It does indeed seem to be about Ethan Hunt battling a self-aware AI program known as the Entity, which I don't know. This, like, he might as well, from my perspective, like, that is as dramatically impactful as, like, he's battling a wizard this time. It's just like, okay, well, that doesn't really make sense to me, or like, it's not like really a thing. And that does, when people are critical of the movie, they seem to say like all the stuff about AI kind of drags a little bit. But and visually, it is depicted as basically an evil screensaver from 1999. Like, it's just
okay,
it's a black circle with like white dots of light. $300 million movie, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But it can, so the main claim that the movie makes about this AI, and I guess AI in general, is that the program can also see the future, like very specifically through its predictive technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like based on what we're seeing in news headlines. Like the, you know, deep learning, teaching computers to predict the future is like a headline I feel like I've seen 100 times. Spooky artificial intelligence can accurately predict the future, and it's about to be asked more questions. AI can now predict crime before it happens, as we'll get into in a moment. And,
oh, you mean like that movie Minority Report, also starring
Tom Cruise?
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. He I feel like his sense of reality is probably more blurred by the movies he's in than other movie star.
Like, I feel like because he has an entire organization blurring his reality before he hits set. And then you're in that magical landscape where he's made himself king.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that guy's not living on planet Earth. He doesn't need to.
Yeah. This movie actually was like written. It was supposed to come out like years ago, but the production famously shut down due to the coronavirus outbreak, which according to reports in February 2020 was putting a real damper on offshore location shoots.
Wow.
Gave us the Tom Cruise thing where it was clear that he thought he was the last barrier between like the end of the world and, you know, coronavirus just like killing everyone, where he was like shouting at everyone. But first of all, I just want to say to AI, speaking of, I'd like to issue a big, where were you on that one, dipshit, to the AI on predicting the global pandemic? Like, we couldn't see that one coming. A lot of people saw it coming. People, just mere people saw it coming. But yeah, the whole predicting the future thing seems to be vastly overstated. Like, so the MIT researchers who had created a computer that could supposedly...
You mean Mission Impossible technology.
Mission Impossible technology. MI technology.
MIT.
Yes. Yeah. They are loosely associated. But it was basically like they were predicting, they would show the computer a picture and then the computer would predict like what would happen for the next 1.5 seconds in that picture. And like that, it was like someone walking across a golf course, and they were like, "Ah, that thing's about to keep walking across that golf course." And they were like, "Holy shit, you guys!" Or like one was a wave crashing. They were like, "I think it's gonna keep crashing." Call me crazy, and they were like, "Fucking A,
this thing is brilliant.
This thing's magical." And. Yeah, and then like MIT Mission Impossible Technology also developed an algorithm that could predict how people will greet each other and got a lot of cool headlines for that. It was trained on YouTube videos and reruns of The Office and Desperate Housewives.
Amazing.
And it was only right just over 43% of the time.
We never greet each other like we do on Desperate Housewives. Right. I wish we did, but like I can't just walk up to my enemy and slap him across the face. It's not reality.
I know. But and that sucks. And hopefully we'll get to that world
sooner.
That's my
later.
Future that I'm hopeful yeah. for. But so 1 second away from the greeting, they could only predict it 43% of the time. So this is what I'm always wondering. Like, what? How does that compare to humans? Humans making the same prediction were right 71% of the time.
Okay.
So much better than this AI that everyone... Did you guys ever see the 60 Minutes where they... Like, the 60 Minutes about AI? I think it came out, like, back in March or April. And, like, I think it's Scott Pelley, like, one of the old journalists on 60 Minutes is just like, okay, like, write a speech for me about this. And then he seems to be blown away by, like, the amount of text it produces. Like, he's like, that just wrote a whole speech in 4 seconds. Like, it's like he's never seen a computer before. But I do think we're at a weird place where people will, you can just be like, magic AI is bad guy in movie. And everyone's like, yep, that makes sense. Cause like we should be afraid of AI, but people don't really know why necessarily we should be. And so we just, you know, like it's the same thing that happens with all our conspiracy theories. And, you know, we should be scared about the pandemic. We should be scared about the government's response to the pandemic. But people create like vast conspiracy theories just to make sure they're like scared about it for nonsensical reasons. Mm-hmm. It's like we need that like cognitive dissonance transference happening. And I feel like we're starting to see that with AI. Where they're like, AI is going to be magic and tell us everything that could happen to us for the rest of our lives. And that's not the scary thing about AI.
Right. The scary thing is like Skynet. And that's the thing, like movies have been having AI as the villain for like decades now. And I feel like, I don't know what my point is going to be. But remember Terminator 1? Remember
do.
The Matrix from 1999 over sure 20 do. Years ago? Like, I just think it's funny that AI, I guess, hasn't evolved very much in movies.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, yeah. I mean, for real. Like
we've been knowing, though, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, you know, movies by their very nature have to heighten and dramatize in order to effectively bring home their message, particularly if we're looking at genre films. And the AI has always been like, you know, turns into a cop and now it's hunting you, or
right,
you know, it's takes away your freedom of choice. You know, if we look at
The Matrix.
Yes. What's the other one? The Minority Report.
Yeah, Minority Report.
Minority Report, mm-hmm. like they're saying so that's like also might commit a crime.
And mm-hmm. it's set in the future. It's like a sci-fi movie where right. like Mission Impossible is supposed to be like, even though they can take masks off that make them look exactly yeah. like the other person, like you wouldn't see Tom Cruise fighting robots necessarily. Or like
no.
the, you know, that feels like it's a step into this is shit that can actually happen. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate the grounding. I think we got there because it's so much more tactile in this moment. I think between, if you think about your grocery store workers who have been concerned about self-checkout for like over a decade, a lot of those stores are unionized and have actively been like, hey, you're taking jobs from like checkout counter people, some of whom are elderly, and this is like the last place they can work and make money consistently, to the writers and actors who may be on strike by the time this comes out. And their fear that not only could AI be used to take their job, but I mean, for performers, can my face be doing things long, long, long after I'm dead? And what will that look like? I think as we're sort of confronting these things, AI is a really friggin' dope tool. I'm so much more concerned about these executives who are like, oh, great, now I don't have to pay people. Did you guys see the IO9 article that was written by AI that came out a couple days ago that had the internet in a tangle?
Yeah, I've ever since I've been, you know, working on the internet, trying to create like unique, interesting content, there's also been this push to just flood the zone with shit, to quote Steve Bannon. Like we used to, like, at Cracked was owned by a company that was like also just destroying Google's search results with just like fake articles, like answers to questions and stuff. And they were like trying to get us to like do that. Just like, there was like, scale, how do we scale? And like, that's been, you know, that intersection of tech and media has always been scary, because it's very easy for them to just create 99 million articles using technology now that like, pass like a little bit. Like, you have to like read a paragraph to be like, wait, this wasn't written by a human, was it?
Yeah. So the IO9 article was like ranking the Star Wars movies in like chronological order, I think. Yeah. And they got the dates wrong on many of them. Sometimes they weren't even listed in chronological order the way they were dated. The information in individual movies was incorrect. Like, it was just error filled. Like, no logical, sane editor would have been like, and publish. And what's crazy is, IO9 has an entire union that's actively been like, hey, we do not want this. It does not make sense to ask an AI program that cannot consistently write fact-checked articles to be publishing these, and then asking somebody, an editor, to like go through and essentially rewrite this incorrect work that isn't benefiting anyone, because who needs this list? Yeah. We have 27,000 of this very specific, well, this is dumb. And it's wild that, you know, I'm glad the internet roasted the EI editor-in-chief pretty intently. I'm really hoping that brings them back to the table and there can be more discussions about how this company decides to use AI in the future. But it's that kind of stupid shit that's like really draining, I think, on workers across job titles. It's just like, what are you trying? You just want to force people out of work. And that's not a logical thing for you to do to yourself. You need people to have money.
Yeah. To your point, the product sucks. Like, the product, like, the AI too is bad as it's bad at its fucking job. Like, with regards to like the self checkout thing, the AI like can't stop people from stealing stuff, and so the companies are like losing massive amounts of money on theft. And then, in order to combat that, they're just like making claims that like everyone's shoplifting, when it's just like, no, like, you just put a like inadequate program like as the thing in charge of like making sure people can't steal stuff, or like that they don't want to steal stuff, and it's just not going to, it's not gonna work. But they
made it way too easy, because when I was in college, we would for sure ring up like a full roast chicken as like some grapes. Bam, we're good. Stop. No. If there's a person there, there's no possible way you could get, like, that used to be somebody's job to scan and bag your stuff. There's no possible way to get around this. That's what I'm saying, though. Like, none of these things are thought out. They just see a way to potentially preserve money without looking at the long-term costs.
And then they still have to hire someone to monitor the self-checkout areas. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, how much money are you actually saving, Mr. Grocery?
Yeah, Big Grocery, which are now owned by just like two companies in all of America. But yeah, like, So they've also been using it in like predictive crime fighting technology. But of course, first of all, the data that it's being fed is from police data. So it's, you know, using the, it's not predicting crime. It's predicting like where police are spending their time is essentially, which is in low income and, you know, non-white neighborhoods. And it's just complete bullshit. There's one great anecdote where Chicago's predictive policing software created by the Illinois Institute of Technology compiled a list of people most likely to be involved in a violent crime.
And they were like,
AI, baby. Check out this. Because it was generated by AI, you can trust this. And then an investigation later found that the software's list of future criminals included every single person arrested or fingerprinted in Chicago since 2013.
Whoa.
So it's just like copying off of another like data
set. All AI can do is it can gather and redistribute information using keywords that the person using it inputs, which means it's logically going to be flawed because it's not understanding the words. It's just reorganizing them in a way that it thinks makes sense to you. It's not a thinking machine.
Yeah.
The technology's not there yet, and people are way too eager to jump into it. In a way that would almost assuredly collapse society, which is why it's insane to me that we're still having to like explain this to people. To be like, they're like, did you guys see the article from what was it, The Hollywood Reporter, that came out about the executives and how they're choosing to fight the unions?
Yeah, by just waiting them out.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. And the key part that's resonated with me was like, this is a necessary evil.
Yeah.
Was the verbatim words from this quote source. And we're pretty sure this is a scare tactic to get SAG to not strike. And then saying, hey, we'll wait out the writers, we'll wait out the actors as well. But I think what's really happened is they've fired up the base of unions to be like, excuse me, a necessary evil is not destroying the beautiful industry and community that people have tried to create here for literally over a century. It's nonsensical. I just I can't understand the end game other than, I guess, 40 people will be a little bit wealthier than
I don't think it's going to cause society to collapse. It'll just accelerate the thing that's already happening, which is just like grotesque inequality like gets worse, and like they're able to hire fewer people to do jobs. And also the other thing that that seems to be happening is like the quality of everything is getting worse, and like that's going to keep happening, you know, like TV shows, movies. Or
but to like, my point, isn't that like, if we can track revolutions based off the price of bread, right? Like, so when people can no longer afford bread, that's when they riot in the streets and take out leaders and get very serious about their actions, because bread is everybody's base staple for survival.
Yeah.
Then if we have a fairly large, like, the entertainment community is huge. I know some people think this is like a very small or elite space, but it's ginormous. And most of the people working in it are like working class people. And so if you eliminate everyone who, I mean, because essentially what, if when AI gets good enough, when it's actually usable, it will eliminate everybody who is of average talent, right?
So
what you do is you write pretty cute Hallmark stories, and you're pretty good at that, and they're successful enough to get commercials and to air frequently, then great. You can probably buy a house, and you can feed your kids and send them to college, and you can have a very comfortable life. If AI can do that job, then you're wiping out hundreds of thousands of jobs, and that is really, really bad news for, like, Los Angeles, the county. Mm-hmm. I just, to me, I know it's, like, a small first step, but to me, like, the dominoes seem large and looming.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely, like, probable, like, if things are not stopped immediately. And I really think that that's the takeaway from the WGA strike, and I really do hope SAG joins, because it's not just going to stop at the entertainment industry. It's going to continue to sprawl out toward, like, we are one American workforce.
Yeah.
And we're all about to be impacted by this shit. It's crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, I think if people had a better sense also of how shitty AI is at its job, it would it would help. You know, help the cause of being like, we don't want you to do a, like, take a program that is like better than, you know, what we could have gotten a year ago when if we were like, Microsoft Word, write me a screenplay. Like, yeah, that's not good. It's not gonna be good, but like, it's still not good. and like, you know, all of anything that you're applying AI to still has all the problems that your previous systems had because it's using those previous systems as input. So just the fact that like news articles about these things fail to focus on like the main point of the study and instead are just like, it's predicting the future. And then like that bleeds into our, you know, our Mission Impossible films, our number, like our modern day Constitution. What's gonna happen? But anyways. Well, Caitlin, such a pleasure having you on the podcast.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much.
Where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
You can follow me on the social media platforms. I've lost track. What's the one that's the Instagram one?
Threads. I don't even...
Threads.
Yeah, I guess I'm on that. Have I posted anything? No, but you can follow me there if you want. And the other places. Also listen to my podcast, The Bechdelcast, that I co-host with Jamie Loftus. Speaking of AI, the episode we released today is on the Disney Channel original movie classic, Smart House. So you're welcome, everybody.
Yes! And... what a win for us. I can't wait to listen.
And if you live in or near LA, I've got some stand-up comedy shows coming up. If you go to my website, caitlindurante.com, the information will be there. But I have one July 28th. It is at 11 p.m., but that shouldn't stop you from going. That's a Friday night.
Comedy and then I night. Have.
That's comedy night in America. And so I've got paint nights, I've got trivia nights, and I've got comedy nights. Night.
That's right.
I have another comedy night on August 2nd. That one is a more reasonable hour of 8 o'clock at night.
There you go.
So check that out.
We'll go check all of those places. Is there a work of media that you've been enjoying?
Yes. These days I usually plug a movie. This one came out about a month ago, but it's still in a lot of theaters, I think. So I would recommend people watch The Blackening. I thought it was super funny and had a blast.
Nice. Joelle, thank you so much for guest hosting on the show. Where can people find you and follow you?
Yeah. Okay. So guys, go to dinner-film.com. It's dash like a hyphen. It's a symbol. If you need help finding it, it's on every app I'm on, which is all of them. Just go to the link in my bio and it'll pop up. Yeah. What's my handle? It's Joelle Monique. Find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique. It's JoelleMoniqueUE. Guys, promoting things is a challenge. I'm going to get better at it. A piece of media I have been enjoying. It is a total cop-out because everyone already knows. It shocks no one. But have y'all seen The Bear? It's great. I honestly, when people are like, haven't gotten into it yet, I'm like, I know there's a mass number of things you could be watching. I know it's called The Bear and it looks like it might be dramatic and depressing. I promise you it's not. It's so fiery and entertaining and funny and the food looks so good and it makes your heart feel good and sometimes makes you a little bit sad, but it's totally worth it because the journey is so well written and performed. Congrats to Iowa Debris, who's so many nominations this year. Watching her career is so inspirational. Watch The Bear, folks. Give it all the love it deserves. It's good for your soul. It's really good. What about you, Jack?
I'm taking that one very slowly. I'm still in the first season, but every time I watch it, I'm like, man, I really like that show.
There's no problem going slow. It will be there for you and it will remain great.
So my wife, like when I was like out of town one time, like left me behind on like episode 5. Like she just like binged the rest of it. And I'm just squeezing it in and I can't do it when we're doing our TV watching. So,
boo. No, you make her rewatch it, Jack. You'd be like, we could have watched this together
the first time.
She ruined it.
Did you intentionally say my wife like Borat, or was that unintentional?
What? I didn't say
you heard it too, right?
What are you talking about?
Just a little bit. Just a casual Borat-ing.
No.
Like you're like, my wife.
My wife? That's just how I say my wife. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find me on Threads at Jack_O_Brien. I'm on Threads and so many underscores in there.
Nice.
And a couple tweets I've been enjoying. Sydney Battle tweeted, if you texted me and I didn't respond, can you text me again to bring it back to the top? I'm too scared to scroll down there. Which, yeah.
Relatable.
And then PJ Evans tweeted, is water in season right now? It's hitting so hard.
Oh my God.
Which, yeah, water's good right now. It's good.
Delicious.
Peak water. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes.
Footnotes!
We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles is out today, so we don't have his song, Rex. He's on the road back tomorrow, but we have the special treat of getting a song recommendation from super producer Justin. Super producer Justin, is there a song that you think people might enjoy?
Yeah, I do. Considering we have two film people in the building today with us, I wanted to suggest a song that has like a very strong visual component when it comes to the music video. So I'll be linking off to that in the footnotes. This is a song called Smoke Break Dance by Mick Jenkins featuring JID or J-I-D. This track is super, super good. It's very jazzy, like boom bap type of hip hop with, you know, obviously incredible lyricism from Mick. But the video has so many powerful visuals. It's like a feast for the eyes. Like every couple of seconds, there's something beautiful happening with the art and playing off the lyrics. It's a really cool interplay of words and visuals. So you can go ahead and check this song out in the footnotes. That's Mick Jenkins, Smoke Break Dance featuring JID.
All right. Well, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. We are back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we'll talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.